Welcome back to the Middle Tech Podcast. Hope everyone is having a great Monday morning so far. We're going to call this episode a Black Mirror episode because there's so much kind of new and emerging technology stories covering on this episode. There's stuff with Neuralink, which is brain-machine interfaces. There's stuff with humanoid robots, AI being able to decipher MRI data and turn it into images. Some wild stuff in this episode, huh?
If things are heating up. AI is becoming more competitive. Robotics is becoming more competitive. It's an interesting time to be alive, that's for sure.
Yeah, so aside from all the Black Mirror kind of freaky stuff we want to talk about, we also want to talk about an awesome story coming out of our state, and that is that the state of Kentucky was just awarded $117 million to support small businesses. So Evan and I actually got together, I believe on Monday, to record just kind of a detailed summary of that press release. So we're going to insert that clip into this podcast so that you guys can get the full rundown on that. We dive into some pretty good detail. So like I said, we'll insert that in. And then the other stories we're going to be talking about, one is Neuralink getting denied for human trials by the FDA. The other is this startup called Figure releasing some renderings and coming out of stealth mode for their humanoid robot. And then in our AI Edge segment, we're just going to be talking about some recent headlines that have gotten us pretty excited and freaked out and every other range of emotion when it comes to these new AI advancements and stories that we're seeing coming out of the AI field. Before we do that, though, we want to get a quick word from our sponsors. Middle Tech is presented by KY Innovation, the Kentucky Cabinet for Economic Development's Office of Entrepreneurship. KY Innovation is currently accepting applications for its SBIR-STTR matching funds program. Kentucky's program is a national trendsetter for providing critical non-dilutive capital to support the high-tech research, development, and commercialization of novel ideas within the Commonwealth. SBIR matching funds have directly contributed to the creation of more than 700 jobs, more than 200 patents filed, and more than $160 million raised in private follow-on funding, and to dozens of companies relocating to the state. The matching funds application window is open through April 24th. To apply and learn more about support services for companies that want to explore SBIR-STTR grants and contracts, visit kyinnovation.com/SBIR. Middle Tech is sponsored by Bolt Marketing. Take your website to the next level with a website that's built to work. At Bolt Marketing, they're revolutionizing websites for small businesses that are affordable, customizable, and hassle-free. Whether you have a construction company, a boutique clothing store, or you own a hot yoga studio, they have options for you. Click the link in our show notes to explore their marketing options that can transform your marketing and grow your business. And as a personal note, Bolt Marketing built our website, and they were awesome to work with throughout the entire process. We highly recommend working with them.
All right, we got some big news here in the state of Kentucky. We were just awarded a very large sum of money to support small businesses in the state. So the headline of this article here and this announcement is $117 million of federal award to increase access to capital for Kentucky small businesses is being given out here. So let's first talk about the origins of this. So this is the state small business credit initiative that the Biden administration has put in place. $10 billion is being given to states across the country. And this is Kentucky's beneficiary. This is what we're being awarded here. So jump back over to that article. Let's talk about some aspects of this.
Yeah, so we just want to go through and pull out some of the key points that we found within this article that really stood out to us as we read through it, and just talk through those, give our opinions on them. So the first point here is that the funding is to support not only venture capital programs, but also loan support programs and community development financial institutions, with an emphasis on access to capital for underserved business owners. So one of the quotes from Governor Beshear here just says, these funds are a boost for businesses still recovering from the pandemic, but also represent a potential watershed for the future of innovative businesses in our state. This significantly increases the capital available to promising businesses at critical early stages and helps lay the foundation for Kentucky's innovative economy of the future. So if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you've heard us talk about access to capital. You've heard us talk about the amount of venture capital that is available in this state. So to see some of this money be dedicated towards the use from our friends like Keyhorse Capital, which we'll get into here in just a second, is a really exciting thing. What's your first thought when you see something like this, that this that Key Horse Capital is going to be receiving some of these funds.
Yeah, it's great. You know, businesses like my own receive funding from the state, specifically Key Horse Capital, to grow our businesses and get them off the ground. It's huge need. You know, if you look at the most innovative parts of the United States on the coast, San Francisco, Boston, New York City, Seattle, you know, these places in America have the most venture capital. That's mm-hmm. not a coincidence.
Yep.
Talented people need capital to build and use their skills and build businesses using those skills. And so this is huge for the state.
Yeah, and just to give some context on Key Horse Capital. So Key Horse Capital is the venture funding arm for the Kentucky Science and Technology Corporation. So we had Terry Samuel back on the podcast. That was back 2-3 seasons ago. So if you haven't listened to that podcast and you want to know what Kentucky Science and Technology Corporation does, I'd recommend going listening to that. But Key Horse Capital is how they invest in early stage companies through their venture capital arm. So we want to click over to their portfolio just so you can get an idea of some of the companies that they've invested in, a lot of which have been on our podcast. You'll see companies like Cloverleaf, Behave VR, Edge Sports, Feed Coyote, Go Wild. We could go down here and list off quite a few that that Key Horse has funded that we've gotten to have on the podcast over the years. So they're doing some great work making sure these Kentucky companies have access to capital. Now they're just going to be supercharged by the funding that is being allocated to the state through this new award. So moving on down here to some other points that stood out to us in this article. We also see here that Key Horse will create some educational programs to foster a new generation of venture capital fund managers and give them the resources they need to be successful in growing Kentucky's venture capital community.
I think this one's huge.
This is something that I think Middle Tech is really passionate about, providing that education. Obviously, that education will probably largely be provided through media and through programming that you know, is so desperately needed for these kinds of programs in our state. I feel like there's just not enough conversation around venture capital as is. So to be able to provide that to the next generation of fund managers, I think, is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, with the capital that you need to deploy, you need, you know, smart people to deploy it, and we need, you know, more of that here in the state. So that's big. I also would love to see, you know, more education funding around, you know, STEM, but also education around angel investment. Angel community here in Kentucky could, you know, use a boost, and I think there's a lot of educational curriculum that could be geared towards angels as well, not just fund managers, but angels themselves. Because I think there's, you know, a lot of programs that the state puts on, like the angel tax credit, that many aren't aware of. But then once you get them aware of that, they need to know how to interface with founders, what to ask founders, you know, how to deploy money into these companies. I think that education's a really big piece of that. And as you said, you know, media plays a really big role mm-hmm. in that as well.
Yeah. Moving on down through this, I think next important point just to discuss here is that this is not only going towards venture capital, like we said. Funding will also support two programs intended to make it easier for lending institutions to finance creditworthy businesses in need of additional capital. I think the main point here to pull out is that, you know, not all businesses are going to be a good fit for venture capital. So that's where these small business loans come into play. I don't know if you have any other thoughts on, you know, those businesses that are not necessarily venture capital backed businesses, but I think it is important to know yeah. that some of this money is going to be supporting those yeah. types of businesses.
I mean, Kentucky's, you know, traditionally known for manufacturing, you know, more conservative business models. Lending is kind of their way of scaling. They don't use traditional venture capital mm-hmm. That we talk about often on this podcast and on our shows. So loan programs are a big part of that. Also, you know, there's many businesses that already have, you know, a successful business model, and they might just need money in a time of need. So whether that's disaster relief or other programs like that, that's important too. And those are typically done through loans versus any kind of venture capital or equity investment.
Yeah, and I think it's important to highlight with these loans, they're really geared towards helping businesses that are either classified as very small businesses or minority-owned businesses or businesses that are either based or plan to be based in disaster relief areas. So really taking that money and making sure it's going towards, you know, small businesses that really need that money in yep. a lot of ways. Moving on down through here. So I think this is just kind of fun to talk about how and sing some praises for Governor Beshear, because he's really had an awesome administration when it comes to investment in the state. So this little point that I pulled out here is, since the beginning of his administration, Governor Beshear has announced the creation of 43,200 full-time jobs, 828 private sector new location and expansion projects totaling $24.6 billion in announced investments. And because of that, with the books closed in 2022, those 2 years are the best two-year period in state history for economic growth. I mean, that's pretty incredible. It's kick-ass.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. He's coming up for re-election, and you know, hopefully, you know, he gets reelected, honestly, on these results. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Speaks for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those some of the most significant investments from his administration are going to be trying to position the state of Kentucky as the, you know, the battery, EV battery production capital of the United States. So we're going to show some of the pictures and some of the progress from those. But just to read these points here real quick, he announced the Ford Motor Co. and SK Innovation project, which is a $5.8 billion investment that will create 5,000 jobs in Hardin County. Is that the one that's near Elizabethtown?
It's Glendale, Kentucky. Glendale, so it's basically Kentucky, Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Glendale is like a town of like 1,800 people. They're dropping 5,000 new jobs in that small town. So Elizabethtown is kind of like the hub.
Yeah.
There's a community college there that's going to support that project with education and on-the-ground support. And then, you know, it's already a town of about 40,000 people. And I heard from a friend who's one of the largest real estate developers in Elizabethtown that they brought in an independent group to do some basically projections on what this means for the city of Elizabethtown. And about 100,000 people are projected to be living in Elizabethtown over the next so many years. I forgot what the number of years was. It might have been 10. But that's not even the same city. So that kind of stuff is how important these projects are to, you know, the region. That's 50,000 people.
Yeah, that's wild. Well, and let's click over to, and I'll enlarge this a little bit so we can see a little bit better. But just looking through some of the progress of this $5.8 billion factory that is being built for EV production. Of course, they want to show me an advertisement. Get out of here.
Just click on the pictures. Yeah.
There we go. Okay, back to, this just kind of shows the state of progress that we're seeing there. So, you know, coming along.
I drove by this the other day on the way down to Nashville. It's looking good. Gray Construction here in Kentucky is one of the big ones working on that here in Lexington. Nice. We got some friends working on this project that we know.
There's the electric Ford that they're building there.
So this is also important to Ford, super important to Ford, because they actually had to shut down production of this vehicle because they were having battery supply chain issues. So this is like mission critical for Ford to get this up and running. You know, it's great that this is happening in the state.
Yeah, I love that. And then the other project that we were referencing that has happened during Beshear's administration is this Envision AESC, which has announced a $2 billion investment that will create 2,000 jobs in Warren County. So this is another EV battery plant that's being built near Bowling Green. So we'll click over to this one. This one is more so just a groundbreaking right now, to zoom in on this one a little bit. But the fact that this is also happening in Kentucky and we're really making an effort to position ourselves as a leader in this EV battery production is a huge, huge deal.
Yeah, we're in top three.
Yeah, just because you see so, I mean, this is where things are trending now as we're trying to make this transition away from internal combustion engines towards these electric vehicles. The country's going to need a lot of batteries, and it looks like a good portion of those batteries are going to be coming from the state of Kentucky.
Yeah, it's all down the I-65 corridor. You got Tennessee, Georgia and Kentucky are leading, as last I saw, I think, across the United States. So we're right in the right area of this. I-65 is where a lot of the manufacturing of vehicles happens across the United States. So we're a key part of that.
Yeah. So those are the main points that we wanted to pull away from this article. Obviously, just super exciting to know that $117 million has been awarded to the state of Kentucky through this program. And a big congratulations and shout out to all the hard work of, you know, Kentucky Innovation, Governor Beshear's administration, and anybody else that helped facilitate these funds getting to our state. It's a really big deal. We're really excited about it. You know, like I said, we've talked about access to capital and the lack thereof on this podcast for a long time. So obviously, we're pretty pumped about it.
Yeah.
So
founders here are super scrappy. They have to do with what they have. And there's amazing founders here that, when given the chance with capital coming from their own backyard, are going to thrive. You know, oftentimes, if a founder wants to grow beyond, let's say, seed round, you know, they might be able to get pre-seed money here and seed, but anything beyond the seed round, you know, they have to leave Kentucky. Hopefully, you know, you have more founders starting companies in that pre-seed and seed that the state can continue to support, but also beyond that seed round, But it is a reality that, you know, founders here have to leave. And so hopefully this creates a scenario where less have to leave, or that the state just gets to invest more in these companies so that when they're a success and there's an exit, that money gets cycled back through throughout the entire ecosystem. So this is, you know, really important, and hopefully it builds a lot of momentum over the next, you know, 10, 20 years. That's kind of the life cycle.
I think one final thought to leave this with is, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, Evan. You're probably more versed in this than I am. But I think this is an interesting time for this to be happening too, as we kind of head towards what looks like a pretty uncertain economic future, you know, probably a recession most likely. And you start to see venture capital dry up in other areas outside of the state of Kentucky. It seems like it'd be a good sign that we have some money flowing in to support Keywords Capital specifically and investing in Kentucky companies. Hopefully that'll be a good outlet for these companies, if, you know, as it dries up in other places that they might have gone to search for it outside of the state.
Well, I mean, the way I look at this is, if you look at, you know, whenever there's economic hardship, oftentimes the best companies come out of those times.
For sure.
They're companies that build the most profitable models. They're companies that, you know, have the most constraints and have to, you know, force themselves to get really creative with how they build their companies or their business models. So this is, you know, a great time to invest, you know, in innovation, because in hard times, oftentimes out of that comes innovation like Uber, Airbnb. Many of the greatest companies we know today oftentimes are coming out of recessions or, you know, economic hard times, economically hard times in the United States. So great time to invest. And it's also a good time to invest because there's just going to be a lot of innovation going forward from here. You know, with artificial intelligence and everything going on that front, there's going to be a lot of new business models and companies popping up that can take advantage of that. And this is going to be viewed as one of those big economic shifts that happened in the technology space, that is a brand new platform, whether it's web to mobile or on-prem to cloud. AI is going to be one of those. Hopefully we start to see some AI companies pop out of Kentucky. We've seen a few investments done recently, so more of that. It's a unique time, just to summarize what you just said.
For sure. All right, for this next story, we have the startup Figure that has come out of stealth mode, talking about building a humanoid robot. So, I mean, this could not be more similar to Will Smith's iRobot movie. It even kind of looks freakier than the iRobot robots. So let me share my screen here so everyone else can see this. But Evan, you kind of wrote the summary on the story here. So why don't we dive in, give an overview of what the startup is hoping to accomplish, and then we'll have a conversation about it.
Yeah, so a lot of companies have been trying to build humanoid robots. There's plenty of robotics companies out there, especially in the logistics and fulfillment industry. I think one of the most famous robotics companies was acquired by Amazon, and they're using it in their warehouses to move boxes around and shelves around. So that's one of the reasons they can get you packages so quickly. But those robots are not shaped like humans. And I think there was a great quote out of this article that I wanted to share, which is essentially, we've built the environment around us as if humans were using that environment. And so that goes for factories, that goes for retail, like stores, really everything we've designed in the real world when it comes to our buildings and the places we interface with, they've been designed around humans. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going to make robots, you know, we should probably design robots to look like humans so that they can interface with the built environment we've already created. So
yeah, I feel like there's some nuance to that just before you go on from there. It depends on what your goal for the robot is. If you're wanting a robot that can help manufacture things, that makes more sense for it not to be super humanoid-like, versus if it's to support humans in day-to-day activities, then they're going to be, you know, immersed in the environment that we've created to, you know, serve humans in our current form.
Yeah.
In fact, that's a little bit of nuance just to the goal of the robot is going to be very important in this conversation.
Yeah, the big race for tech companies, though, is like the general purpose. That's, you always hear like general purpose AI, AGI. Same with robots. You know, the majority of tasks done are done by humans. And so the big market opportunity out there is a general robot that can do, like you said, manufacturing and then turn around and pick up some boxes.
Yeah.
Having a very niche application for robotics makes sense today. When you're doing assembly lines, like I said, Amazon warehouses, but the real big opportunity is a robot that can work 24/7 and do a lot of different jobs in a factory, so you don't have to buy as many robots. So that's kind of what people are aiming to do. They're really kind of focused on a few things, this Figure company. They're focused on warehouse fulfillment and logistics,
manufacturing and retail. So a lot of this involves picking stuff up, moving it around, sorting items. Things like that are where robots are really going to shine. And it's really important. So a few things I wanted to pull out of this and share with other culturally relevant events is, you know, there's a big labor shortage in the United States for jobs like this.
Says that right here on their website. They call that out specifically.
Yeah. So, you know, Americans just don't want to work as hard these days in manual labor. I mean, it's true. I mean, it's there's plenty of jobs out there and people don't want them. And that's going to continue. So that's something that I think robotics companies are, like in this website right here, they're really hitting on. And it's especially relevant in other countries like Japan. Japan's fertility rate is well below the replacement rate. And the country is, you know, in almost a state of emergency where they're trying to figure out how do we have more people to do productivity-related jobs, you know, in manufacturing, in retail. So it's a big problem. Shrinking workforce can bring a country and an economy to a halt because if you don't have people that are working these jobs, these labor jobs in factories or out in the field or, you know, general retail, which is a very large portion of the economy, you can't keep people and the economy running. And then the other problem is, you know, if you don't have people working, you don't have tax dollars being produced. And so the pension funds, healthcare, things like that aren't able to be funded if people are just sitting around or if you don't have the population to support those positions. So those are a few things like going on out there. A lot of companies are trying to address this. It's becoming more and more relevant. Elon speaks out about this all the time. Mm-hmm. Tesla is doing their piece with their Optimus robot. And everybody's probably very familiar with Boston Dynamics. Everybody's probably seen those YouTube videos of those robots jumping around.
Let's hit on that point real quick, the difference between what Boston Dynamics is doing versus what companies like Tesla is doing with Optimus and what Figure is doing with theirs. And correct me on this if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, Boston Dynamics is creating robots that can do really impressive maneuvers, but they're not driven by AI. Like they can't operate autonomously.
Yeah.
They have to be programmed for the actions that they want to do, which is very impressive. But I think that what we're seeing here with Figure, what their goals are and like what Tesla's goals are with Optimus is to have it driven by artificial intelligence, have it be able to go out and carry out a task. You can give it a task in very simple language and then it is able to deduct what it needs to do next and essentially reason through it and think like a human would to complete that task.
Yeah, I would say Figure's in the same boat as Boston Dynamics there. Tesla's the only company with the ability to basically navigate a robot through the real world. Tesla has obviously the most powerful artificial intelligence when it comes to robotics and navigation with their cars, and they are mapping the real world and they're creating these models that can help a machine navigate the real world. So they're trying to basically extrapolate that and apply it to robotics as well, like these humanoid robots. And yeah, to your point, Boston Dynamics and Figure just aren't touching on that right now. So I would assume they would license that model from something like a Tesla. Mm-hmm. But I'll be curious to see how they evolve on that front. But right now, Tesla's far and away the leader in artificial intelligence when it comes to this kind of navigation and robotics.
Yeah. A couple last things about Figure here. I'll share my screen again. Is one, they have a really high-powered team behind this. So they have people that have worked at Tesla, people that have worked at Boston Dynamics. Like they have the team to bring this idea to life. The other thing is like I just want to spend a second talking about what the future could look like with this kind of technology there. I mean, being able to take jobs that are very manual labor-based and be able to essentially automate those away with robots, I think is a really exciting future. I think we all tend to look at the sci-fi iRobot scenario and get kind of worried about that. And I'm sure there are definitely risks to having, a large robot workforce. But in terms of the future of humanity and quality of life for humans on Earth, being able to automate away a lot of these, you know, menial, manual tasks, I think is a really exciting future to think about. So other than that, anything else you want to add to that story before moving on to talking about Neuralink?
Nope.
All right. Next story here. Let's talk about Neuralink getting denied by the FDA. So for those of you who follow Elon Musk and his 10 different companies that he likes to work on, one of which is Neuralink. And what Neuralink is working on is called a brain-machine interface, which is essentially a chip that can be inserted into your brain and have essentially filaments that go down into your brain, can take the brain brain waves. What's the word I'm looking for there? Is it?
I don't know.
Brain.
I don't know.
Fair enough. It can take your brain waves and it can essentially convert those into a signal that can go into this brain machine interface, and then you can use your brain waves to interact with technology. They have been denied by the FDA to proceed into human trials, which Elon Musk was predicting they were going to be getting into in May of 2023. So give us the details around this story. What does this mean for Neuralink? Where do they go from here?
Yeah, so their big goal, like Elon said, was to start human testing. The goal for Neuralink is to basically allow us to interface with artificial intelligence versus have to interface with like a computer or a phone. This basically allows us to compete with artificial intelligence and robotics for the long run. And the first kind of applications of this that he's been talking about are restoring sight, restoring mobility. He believes that this company can do it. So they're definitely hitting roadblocks. One of them, which we mentioned here, the FDA is denying their request to do human testing. They cited a few different issues, like the neural lace basically migrating through the soft brain tissue and damaging the brain.
Sounds scary.
The device could overheat and damage the brain. The battery could fail, and you could just have this hardware in your head that's not being powered. And then the removal of this device could damage the brain or create some kind of rejection scenario where the tissue or the brain doesn't react well to it being removed. So those are valid reasons not to
do
human testing. And this is not unexpected. You know, Elon has talked about they're going to have these issues, but he was still upset and still pushing his team very hard to get through these issues. But he might be pushing his team too hard, or there might be some other issues going on within Neuralink because a lot of the leadership is leaving and some of them are actually going and starting competing companies. So I think this is kind of a crazy research project that, you know, we saw that monkey video.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Come out last year. It looks like they're making some pretty wild progress, but doing it on another human is... that's a pretty scary step.
Let's summarize what that video actually showed. In case you haven't seen it, you should go to YouTube and look up, I guess you would just type like monkey Neuralink test. They implanted one of these Neuralink devices into a monkey. They essentially trained the monkey with a reward system for playing a video game. I believe it was just like moving a joystick around and playing Brick Breaker, one of those type of video games. And if it was doing it successfully, it got a banana smoothie through a straw. They eventually, after training it, disconnected the joystick from it, and they were interpreting its brain waves via the Neuralink implant, and it was controlling the video game with its brain, which is pretty wild to see. So I would encourage you to go look that up if you haven't seen it. To close out this story, would you ever get one of these? Let's say, I'm not going to make up some fake scenario.
Would we be one of the first people or later?
I would never be one of the first people, but let's say it's like it's gone through FDA trials. The FDA says it's okay.
Yeah, I probably would, especially if you can remove it without having any issues. If I could go back on my decision, I definitely would, for sure.
Yeah, I guess there's a ton of variables to consider with that. I don't know. I don't know if I would. I think we're going to look at this sort of stuff as we do with social media. It's like the generations after us just tend to adopt that stuff much quicker. You know, like now the generations that have come after us, they don't know what life was like before social media and before screens. And I think I'm fine. Like, I like my life without being able to interface constantly with technology. I don't know. I don't think I would do it. It would take some convincing.
You could say the same thing. Like, before the iPhone came out, you could have said, I don't want to have a phone in my pocket that is a computer and I could access the world's information and communicate with people. You would have said the same thing. This is... really not a whole lot different than that. It's just implanted in your mind and you have on-demand access. I mean, it's just crazy. Like one more step than the iPhone, really,
yeah.
If you think about it.
No, it's really getting into, it's really, like I said, this is a Black Mirror episode. It's getting into that sort of territory. I mean, I think that's the whole premise of the Black Mirror show is extrapolating. It's like kind of science fiction, but it's also done through the lens of technology that is not super out of the realm of possibility. And I think we can take this into AI Edge, because one of the stories here is pretty wild what they've accomplished with artificial intelligence and with not necessarily a brain machine interface, but an MRI machine and scanning brain waves through that device. So to get into our AI Edge segment, as you know, AI Edge is just where we talk about the latest in artificial intelligence and try to give tips on how you can gain an edge with artificial intelligence. I think the top story we want to discuss for this segment on this episode is a team of researchers in Japan has managed to, let me make sure I describe this correctly. I'm actually going to pull up the article while I talk about it because this is pretty advanced stuff that they do. So they have managed to use Stable Diffusion, which is one of these image generation models, to reconstruct brain images without fine-tuning the model. So they've essentially shown images to these test subjects. They put them in an MRI machine. They've gotten that MRI data, and they fed that back into this diffusion model, this image generation model. And the images that they're able to reconstruct from this MRI data is pretty insane. So up at the top here, you can see the images that were shown to the test subjects. And down at the bottom, this is the output for the images that were recreated from the data from those MRIs. So I'm going to be honest. I don't understand exactly how they're doing this. It's kind of freaky technology to me. I think this section right here kind of summarizes it as best that I would be able to. It says specifically, the researchers map brain regions as inputs to image and text encoders. The lower brain regions are mapped to the image encoder, and the upper brain regions are mapped to the text encoder. This allows the system to use image composition and semantic content for reconstruction. This is, have you seen the Black Mirror episode where they're able to like replay their memories?
Yeah.
This seems like a step towards that.
Yeah. I mean, they're reading people's brains and then creating images.
I do think it's an important distinction to say. It's like AI is not necessarily reading your mind. It's reading the data that was collected through a very specialized machine that can read your brain waves.
That's the same thing.
I don't think so.
Yeah. It's just it's reading your mind through other technology. I mean, it's just reading your mind through several different technologies.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, I don't – yeah, anyway. You have to be stuck in an MRI machine for AI to read your brain, which is
– well, I think that's ultimately the good transition from Neuralink to this is –
That's
what Elon is trying to do is take these brain waves and these brain signals, just like what's happening here, read them using some kind of technology. In this case, it's an MRI. And then create an output for artificial intelligence to take action on, which is what happened.
Yeah. The brain-machine interface mixed with a technology like this, I think, is where you can start to see how something like what exists in Black Mirror could actually come to be a real thing in the future. And yeah. I think it's just like...
The pace at which this stuff is happening right now is unbelievable. I mean, it's not going to be long until we're going to have... Yeah, little robo assistants walking through our homes and chips in our head. I mean, it's going to happen in our generation for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of this stuff it'll be our kids' problems. I don't know if we'll be dealing with it as much. Maybe when we're 60, 70, 80. Sooner than that.
No, I think it'll be about that.
Yeah. That's kind of my prediction on it. All right, that's probably one of the most wild stories I've come across in a while as it relates to AI. Another story that we wanted to go over, talk about this Shopify chatbot.
Pull up the video here. I think it's best to just see. Essentially, it's a chatbot. You talk to it, and it will basically interface with Shopify and pull up exactly what you want, suggest options, and then you can just buy it right in line with the chat.
Yeah, so you can kind of talk through what it's doing here. In this example, it's saying like, hey, I'm hosting a dinner party for the specific type of Japanese meal. I need, special cooking utensils to do this. And then it's going through and suggesting them and pulling up vendors that sell specifically what they're looking for. It's making suggestions. It's saying, let's get this one, let's get that one, add it to the cart. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Pretty wild shopping experience.
You can start to get this idea of, you know, whether it's Microsoft or Google, wherever you're interfacing with the internet, you're gonna, just going to have a chat bot. I think we're going to get used to interfacing with the internet via like a chat interface. Yeah.
And I think that brings us on to this last headline that I was following and pretty excited about this week, and that is that ChatGPT's API is now available, and it's actually really cheap. So to your point about interfacing with a lot of applications and different things like that through a chat feature, through natural language, I think there's huge potential for pretty much every kind of software, like software that's really complex, to be able to interface with that in a natural language sort of way. Let's take like Adobe Illustrator, for example, or Photoshop, something that's like takes a lot of learning to figure out how to use it effectively. Being able to have, you know, a chat-like feature to say, okay, take out the background on this, and then that can translate that into the software. I think that sort of stuff is coming. And while you give a couple other thoughts on this, I want to try and pull up a tweet I think that I sent you. Somebody had connected this API to Minecraft. And did you see that tweet?
No,
that
I didn't watch that.
All right, you give a few points. I'm going to pull up that tweet and share that, because that was a pretty cool example of kind of what I'm saying right there.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I'm paying attention to is every application, and we said this on the last episode, every application is going to have some form of large language model incorporated into it.
Yeah.
These models are going to be, like I said, like electricity. Every application is going to have either a chat interface or a voice to some kind of action. Are you showing that video there?
Yeah. So what he's doing here is he's basically, I'm not sure if this is Minecraft or not. I'm really not sure what the application is, but he's got this online world and he's manipulating this online world through chat. So he's saying replace everything with trees. Then he's saying make them all tall buildings, and it's able to interpret that and then input that into the software and actually like change the design of this software.
Another thing to pay attention to right now is a lot of these example videos and a lot of the use cases today are, you know, you have to type something into a keyboard, but you'll just be able to speak and it's going to do whatever you tell it to. So we're going to get to the point where, you know, you're in your car and you tell it to, you know, do X, Y, and Z, it'll do it. You'll be behind your computer and you'll be using Microsoft Word and you'll tell it to bold the last sentence you typed and it'll just magically bold it. You're going to be able to talk to every application and every device and it's going to do what you want. That's what this is all moving towards.
Yeah, I wanted to try and pull it up real quick. So not only was ChatGPT's API introduced, but there's also a new API called Whisper that I would like to try and talk a little bit about as well. Whisper deals a lot with audio transcription. So like taking audio, transcribing it like that, and then being able to essentially do what you say and use that as an input. It sounds like it's a much more powerful version than what's out currently. I'm not able to pull up something at the moment that would dive into more detail on that. But the other point about this story that I wanted to dive into was the cost of this. And people have been pulling up some pretty cool examples of like what you can do for the cost of using this API. So the API cost is a fraction of a cent. So it is 0.002 cents per 1,000 tokens. What a token actually is the amount of text that this model is actually generating. So like one paragraph is equal to about 100 tokens, just for frame of reference there. And on Twitter, there's been all sorts of cool examples of what you could do and at what cost using this API. So one of the cooler ones that I saw, I'm a big Harry Potter fan. The screen share stopped working again. Anyway, I'll just talk through this one. I saw a tweet that was saying it only costs $4.30 to process the entire Harry Potter series combined with ChatGPT's new pricing, which essentially what that would allow you to do is take every bit of text in every single Harry Potter book and put that in there and then essentially process that to do whatever you wanted with it. So whether you wanted to summarize the entire Harry Potter series, whether you wanted to manipulate it, whether you wanted to feed that into text to image generation, all sorts of stuff like that. It costs $4.30 with this new API to do that. There are a couple other examples that were flying around Twitter around code and things like that. But the main point around this is that it's becoming, it's like if this stuff has just popped up and now the price of it even is starting to come down really, really quickly. Yeah. So,
I mean, the thing to think about is it's going to be a race to the bottom. It's going to be getting cheaper and cheaper as computational power increases, these models improve. So, you know, if you're going to build a product with this, you better have some kind of good either proprietary data set or some kind of other network effect or moat, because just because you basically, the word that everybody's been using is building a wrapper around ChatGPT, you're not going to build something that's worth anybody's time. There's going to be too many competitors. It's going to be something that you can probably just do in ChatGPT anyways or a similar model. So you better figure out how to get some kind of proprietary data or network effect around these models, because you're not going to be able to differentiate. And then again, it's going to be a race to the bottom on pricing, so you're not going to really have any price control. That's what's going to be so great, I think, about this is, especially with ChatGPT, you know, pushing the space and building APIs, and you know, we've been going back and forth on whether this is truly open source or not. At least they're releasing the models for anybody to build with. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody can just go download, you know, Google's model and start building with it. OpenAI is pushing the space more than anybody, because they let the public do what they want and build all the different use cases that, you know, OpenAI might not be thinking of. So that's the few things that come to my mind with price going down and more access being available.
Yeah, no, those are good points. And then our last bit of the AI Edge segment here is just our tip of the week, as we like to do. This one's pretty simple. This is just around crafting a custom workout plan for yourself. So with this one, we simply fed into ChatGPT. We said, hey, can you create a 90-day workout plan with a focus on lower body and core muscles, organize everything into tables? And it does exactly that, which would love to share my screen and show what that looks like, but our software is being a little wonky right now. This is just to prove a point that you can create very customized plans for yourself, whether it's around studying, whether it's around a project, or whether it's around working out. You just tell, the more detail you give it, like we've always said with these tips, the better it's going to do for you. So it laid out a pretty awesome looking workout plan. It's got three phases, weeks 1 through 4, 5 through 8, weeks 9 through 12. It's laid it out in a nice clean table by day, by exercise, by sets and reps, amount of rest you need. Pretty impressive stuff. So yeah, that's the tip of the week, using it to lay out a plan, whether it's for studying, working out, projects you're working on, all sorts of stuff like that you can use it for. So with that, any other final thoughts on this Black Mirror episode?
No.
Scary future we're going into, huh?
No, I think it's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's scary if you look at it as a Black Mirror episode. You can definitely freak yourself out when you think about the negative side of all this stuff. But got to be an optimist going into a future like this, that's for sure. So thank you guys for tuning in. I hope you learned something from this episode, and we'll talk to you next week.